At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
You know, so we ain't really never had no old money. We got a whole lot of new money, though. Raindrops.
This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Presented by Coors Light. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Well, actually, it would be Lance Zierlein and Eric Layden today with you. Raheel's going to come in an hour. And we will get it done. That joining us right now is a very special guest, somebody who I've wanted to have on the show for a while, dating back to the other radio station. And he played Doug Stamper, the president's right-hand man on House of Cards. He is a huge Atlanta Falcons fan. That Super Bowl wasn't his favorite moment. Huge Braves fan. And now is on a show called Long Road Home that's on Nat Geo that has it's airing right now. And many of you, I'm sure you've seen the commercials for it. And that would be Michael Kelly Jr. Michael, first of all, welcome into the show. We really appreciate you taking time to join me and Eric today.
Thanks for having me. How's it going, guys?
It's going good. It's going good. So when Eric, when we first did our fantasy football league last year, And Eric told me, yeah, I should get Michael Kelly in, see if he wants to get a team or co-own with me, and yada, yada. He's really into football, really a Falcon fan. I did some research on you because I'd been watching you on House of Cards, and I'd seen you on some other stuff as well. And I didn't realize, I mean, you're in pretty, like Eric is to Houston, you're kind of that way with Atlanta sports.
Yeah. It's funny, I mean, because I was born in Philly, but I've lived, all my growing up was in Atlanta, and when I moved to New York like 20 plus years ago, it was like, you know, everyone's like, dude, you gotta become a Yankees fan. You gotta become a Jets or a Giants. I'm like, no, I don't. Why would I do that? Like, I don't care where I live, man. That was the team that I knew growing up. So for me, I just, you know, plus I always just hated the New York teams.
Yeah, exactly.
Uncle Mikey, dude, good to talk to you, man. It's been a minute. Congrats on everything. You're crushing it. Like I always knew you would. We got to know each other a little bit during Generation Kill, spent 7 months in Africa together. An amazing experience. But talking sports here, Houston and its fans are accustomed to brutal losses. Losses that haunt you. You guys with the Falcons, I can't remember if you made it down to Houston for the game or not. I feel like you did, but that loss was treacherous. How did it sit with you, man?
It still hasn't. That's something that'll never leave you, man. You can't. You just can't.
No.
You can't get over it. You know. But I remember. Like I wasn't there. I ended up not going. Family reasons, but it was for me like that first play of the second half. I was just like, oh shit, you know. Oh. You saw him come out.
We got it. We caught you. You're good.
You know, with Bill Belichick, I mean, and Tom Brady, that's, I don't think we're ever going to see anything to rival their accomplishments or their level of talent. I don't think we'll ever see it again. And you know, there's nobody who makes better adjustments. And I just think that our defense gave 110%, and they were beat up.
You caught yourself.
Yeah, you did caught it yourself. That's good.
Yeah, you caught yourself. But you know what? We were all saying the same thing from the stands that you just said on the radio. I was at the game. I was at the game, and I left to beat the media rush out. I'm the guy that left the Super Bowl, and I missed this. Oh. And I watched the end of it in a Hilton's downtown with a bunch of Patriots. I mean, it couldn't have been a worse scenario for me. I left the most incredible ending to a Super Bowl game ever. I missed it from a historic standpoint, and I'm a sports talk host. And I had to watch it with a bunch of Patriots fans screaming at Raja the whole time, "You can suck this Roger. And that's a woman telling him to suck things.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, oh, my God, please don't let them come back and win. Please don't let them come back and win. And it was unbelievable. And if look, I've been in a oh no scenario. Eric knows. As Houston fans, we're always in that scenario or in that mode. You had to look at the all time Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, and you had to be sitting there thinking, oh my God, please, Kyle Shanahan, just eat the clock. Please don't try to be a genius. And he tried to be a genius.
I think, and it's easy to sit here and dissect the game, you know, a year later, but I mean, I did like what Shanahan said afterwards. He was like, look, he's like, sure, yeah, I could have run the ball. He's like, but I didn't want to all of a sudden start changing how we got this far. You know, we got this far because we kept our foot on the gas the whole game, every game. So, you know, it's easy to sit here and be like, oh, my God, why didn't he run it? Yeah, but I did understand what he was saying. That being said, later, dude.
Yeah, I will say this, having just won a World Series, watching the Astros, our team, win a World Series. Thank you. It does take some of the sting away. You know, when you get to finally celebrate that.
You forget about that other stuff. But I don't. But how is it for you? Because you're a Braves fan and you won a World Series with a great team, but there was a lot of getting there. Like, how do you remember those Braves runs? Hall of Fame pitchers, three of them, and yet one title. It's like, I always felt like Braves fans weren't really that happy with just one.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I mean, I did get one in my lifetime, and that feels really good. And I think, you know, like Houston, I think Atlanta is going about it the right way in rebuilding the team. All the cheating and whatnot aside, and losing the 12 prospects, that didn't hurt.
Firing your own GM,
but I think that they're going about it the right way. I think I will get to see another one. I think that they are Houston 3 years ago now, 4 years ago. When you just got to go to rebuild. I like the direction we're going, but in all honesty, like the ones that we didn't win, there's only one that we should have won. And Chipper put it best. He was like, you know, all those times that we made it, all those times that we won the division, 14 straight division titles, that'll never be broken in modern baseball again. That, to me, he said, the only time that we were the better team and lost is when we lost to the Yankees. You know, and I tend to agree, man. They made it on a lot of grit, and yeah, they had those three pitchers, but we all know it takes more than that. And, you know, the one time that they should have one more. So I'm not too pissed about that. And it was such a fun run with seeing those three guys pitch, man. That was amazing. Amazing.
Mikey, flipping over to entertainment, you guys started House at a time when Netflix was kind of just getting off the ground. I remember, you know, it was really like the first show over there. And I remember talking to you on the phone.
How long ago? When did it start? 11?
It was like six years ago?
Yeah. And I just remember saying, like, you know, how's this going to change the game? You know, like, are they going to release all of them at once? And I just wonder from your perspective, like, being a part of something like that that starts this kind of craze and trend of streaming television, like how you think that's kind of changed the game.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. I remember, you know, like you were just saying, Eric, when we were working on it, Fincher showed me a rough cut of one when we were still filming, and you know, my manager had been like, oh, how's it going? And I was like, I said, Fincher just showed me an episode. I said, this show is really good, B. I was like, this is incredible television. I don't know if anyone's ever going to see it, but we're making something special. You know, because that's where you got your DVDs, right? And they were doing some streaming, but not original content. And I didn't even, you know, I'm not a techie dude, Eric can tell you that. But it's like, to see now how that completely changed the landscape. I mean, I remember it was either Kate Mara or Constance Zimmer we were having lunch, and one of them said, we were all eating lunch together, and one of them was like, do you think we'll be eligible for the Emmys? And I was like, I don't know. I mean, is it TV? But we didn't even know what it was, you know? And now to see, you know, Hulu and Amazon and just how it completely changed the landscape of television is what we consider to be TV, it's cool, man. You know, my kids are 8 and 5 now, and to tell them one day, hey, man, you know, you watch TV? Like, we started that. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, it's interesting, too, because now I'm back, you know, and I've been on shows that were written in that, you know, you write for that. And now being back on a show on History Channel where there's commercials, it's really interesting because I get scripts now and I can see act outs. You know, whereas
what does
like,
that mean?
Well, an act out, in other words, like they have to actually write. You know how something always happens before a commercial? There's
you
always
mean like
a
on
big
every soap opera ever.
Yeah, but even good cable television, damn it, okay. I'm not on a soap opera.
Okay,
but even on good cable television, you still have to keep people through a commercial break.
Yeah,
that's something writers have to think about. So they have to hit a hard act out to make sure that you keep viewers through a commercial, right? Even though most viewers are going to record and DVR, you don't have to do that on a show that streams. Like there is, you know, you can slow burn all the way through the episode.
Yeah, that's
and,
a good point.
And even on, if you didn't have commercials, you're usually trying to end an episode really high to keep your viewership. But on a show on Netflix like House of Cards, you can really like take your time and dig in because somebody can click right onto the next episode.
Yeah, well, they're going to watch their captive audience anyway.
Right. Go ahead, Mike.
And it gives the writers total artistic freedom, you know. And Netflix and MRC, you know, the way that they gave us this order was 26 episodes. Here's 50, you know, whatever, however, 100 million, whatever they gave us. I don't remember the number now, but give us 26 episodes of great television. And the writers could write these, you know, like you said, not having to write for anything other than tell a story and let it burn over two seasons. Like, that's an incredible gift to get as a writer, especially with our shows. Many of them are playwrights, you know? So you could really just, giving that artistic freedom to the creatives, I think, lends itself to great content. And I think that a lot of people not just took the binging model from Netflix, but took that, hey, man, turn it over to the people who want to make the art, you know, and the executives are taking a step back. And that's when you get great content.
I can tell you, I mean, I just, from a character standpoint, too, that it was one of the rare characters where you really got to develop, okay, you had the hard exterior and you had the cool, tough demeanor. But then you got to see the layers to the character with the drinking problem and the demons he was battling and the kind of toggling between, you know, bad guy, but he's working for a bad guy, and you're the arm of the bad guy, but you're not really a bad guy, but then you're willing to do stuff anyway. Like, we got to see moments with your character that was like that. The character now, right now, you have Long Road Home. People can check it out on Nat Geo. How different? So this is it's based in Iraq, and there is an ambush, and you've got to try to get out of there. And it's granted, there's the storyline's much bigger than that, but how? In terms of, is there a challenge going from what you had been doing to where you are now? How different is your approach to the role?
I mean, I approach everything much in the same way, in that I read it, and either I identify with this character or I don't. You know, like, it's something that's going to come to me or it's not. And this man, I had played a version of him in the job that Eric and I had done together on Generation Kill. You know. These men who can stay calm no matter what happens and be leaders no matter what is going on, bullets flying around them. None of that stuff matters, you know. It's that strength of the character. And jumping between them, like I said, as long as I identify with the material, jumping between things is not as hard for me as say it was to actually live on Fort Hood. In army barracks, that was kind of hard for me. and I say that jokingly because I did love my time there. But, you know, making those life adjustments, you know, when you're an actor and, you know, you're certain, you typically, when you travel, you stay in a nice hotel and nice restaurants and, you know, going and living like we did in Africa as well sometimes, where it's just like, you're just, oh, you mean tea and biscuits are our lunch? You know, you go from living pretty well to living like on nothing. And it's cool, and it helps you get into the character, and it helps you build those things. But, I'll sidetrack there. But I don't mind. I love it. You know, when I was doing Generation Kill with Eric in Africa, I was doing another film. It was a period piece that I was flying to L.A. and back and forth from Africa on that one. And, you know, you get so into it that it's not that hard.
You're on also, we know you got to go, but you're also on an episode of Black Mirror. So when you have House of Cards, which when we get off the line with you, I want to discuss how that really played into the cord cutting generation, because I think that was one of the conduits to the cord cutting, which plays into the sports world right now with some of the TV ratings. And then you look at Black Mirror, which I think is one of the most incredible shows out there today. I think people look back at your career, and granted, that was an episode, but since every episode lives individually, I think some of the most entertaining and some of the shows that are going to shape our future in terms of entertainment are happening right now on Netflix, Amazon, Hulu. I mean, this is where a lot of it's happening right now.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I think, you know, as an actor, if you just trust your, you know, obviously you trust your team, but you also, you trust that in the end you want to work with filmmakers you admire, showrunners you admire, writers you admire, and actors who you want to collaborate with. If you kind of stick to that and you're in a position where you don't have to do one for the money, then you're in a good place. You know, I did one for the money on my resume, and it was for $15,000 one year, 'cause I had no money. I made like 10 grand on The Sopranos that year. And I was like, B, I got to make some money this year. There was this offer to do this terrible horror film thing. And I took it, and he's like, begged me not to. You know, and now, thankfully, I don't have to do that. There might come a time again in my life where I have to do something for the money, but right now I don't, and that sets you up to make great decisions as an actor.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, we've all been there in that position, and like you said, I mean, you make good decisions, and usually things fall into place. Mike, I know you got to go. I appreciate you being here. You're one of the good guys, a guy I always root for, and couldn't be more stoked for you the way everything's going, and hopefully get to see you in person soon.
You too, brother, man. I feel the exact same way about you, man. You keep kicking it.
Will do, man.
I caught myself again. How about that?
There you go. Yeah, you can, that's good. You're getting good at this.
Yeah. Hey, come on our podcast sometime. You can let it fly.
You
come on our podcast and you can say everything you actually thought during the Super Bowl. You don't have to worry about it.
Let's set it up, Eric. That'll be fun. I can just rant.
There you go.
Absolutely.
Have fun with the family. Tell Karen hello, man.
All right, man. Everyone, right. Happy holidays.
All right, man. Be good.
That's Michael Kelly Jr. And his show out right now is Long Road Home on Nat Geo. If you never had a chance to watch House of Cards, start on season one and roll, because it's an incredible show. And I do think it led to some of the cord cutting. We'll talk about that here when we come back in a second. It's 8:21 here on The Bench.
ESPN 97.5.
We'll be right back after this break.
Good morning. Good morning.
I knew you were going to play some Kanye. You got Jose in there, and you got Raheel coming up next. Raheel's going to jump in here and join us. How's the L.A. life like when it comes to the social? Because you're not really a L.A. type of, like, typically what people would think of L.A. type a guy. But you went to Kincaid here,
yep.
Right? You grew up here. You went to USC Film School. This is Eric Layden, by the way. Lance Erline, Eric Layden. We got a podcast called Off Script. You might want to check it out. We're going to start cranking it back up here soon. Chris Solis, also a co-host. Everything is fair topic there. You live next to a rapper, Kool Keith.
I did.
A lot of people who know the rap game will know the name Kool Keith. But Kool Keith wasn't really banging at that time. It was a little different time in his career. He moved from New York down to L.A. and then back to New York. When he lived next to you, he was in an apartment. You were just trying to make ends meet. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
how long ago was this?
You know, this was 2002 to 2007.
So what was going on in Kool Keith's world then?
Well, I'm catering.
Yeah.
I know that.
You're doing some catering.
Yeah, I mean, I'm coming home
so
in a dirty
apron. So the shows
that
I watch is literally, that's what it actually means to be a young actor. You're doing everything that they make it, you think, nah, that's just a stereotype.
No, that's for real. I worked for about four different catering companies.
Okay.
And you work for multiple because, and the reason catering is such a good gig is because you can turn it down. You know, if they call and you got something going on, you can turn it down. You know, whereas if you have a restaurant gig, you know, you can't, it's harder to get your shifts covered.
Yeah.
So I had worked at a restaurant, I'd worked at Cheesecake Factory, and a couple others, but no, I was catering primarily, bartending and stuff. And Cool Keith was shooting like amateur movies in his apartment.
Yeah.
You know,
you mean like docu-style?
Yeah. Doc style.
Or more POV style.
Because
they're different.
He was ahead of the game on that POV style.
Yeah, yeah. Because I was going to say, there's documentaries, and then there's what the kids call POV.
Right.
Which is a different form of documentary.
Right. Yeah, so his was definitely realism.
Uh-huh.
It was docu-style.
So they were not actors. They were trying to get into the business?
They were aspiring.
Right.
Right? Uh-huh. Usually vehicles for aspiring female actresses.
Yeah, sure.
And typically adult content.
Steered towards the
adult genre.
It's not something we'll find on stream. Actually, you do find it on streaming.
You will find it on streaming.
And you don't even need to pay a monthly subscription fee typically.
No. And, you know, oftentimes if you have a VPN, it's not the worst idea to click it on.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
Just to kind of brush over those footprints.
Yeah, no,
those
no question.
Online footprints.
No question.
Yeah.
So Cool Keith, but then he did a rap video in the same apartment. He did a rap video that I found online.
Yep.
Like he in that same apartment.
Yes.
Were you in it?
I was not in it. I was absolutely not in it. I feel like you're doing a discredit though to his. The Undertakers, because it was actually Cool Keith.
Go find some Cool Keith and the Undertakers.
Because it wasn't just him. I mean, he had some guys with him, his entourage.
Keith's got some real stuff out there for sure.
I was pretty tight with Keith. I called him Shants.
Okay.
That's because he wore short pants. Those pants that kind of they kind of clip between the knee and the ankle. And this was, 2004, 2005. This is well ahead of the game.
Yeah.
He's kind of like he wore the pants that like you see like your friend's mom wearing, like the tourists from like Minnesota that rolls in, they're rolling through
the
Galleria.
That's a good look. You typically want the tourists from Minnesota.
That's kind of those.
Was that
pants.
Hot in California at
well,
that time?
Well, here's the thing. Shants, he kind of changed the game. He was like the
tastemaker.
He was like the Russell Westbrook of fashion for my apartment building Taste of Honey.
I got you.
You know what I mean?
Oh, wait. So, I'm sorry. Taste of Honey was the name of your apartment building.
Yeah. Yeah. Taste of Honey on Martell.
Taste of Honey.
Between Fountain and Sunset.
They were shooting POV movies in an apartment next to yours at Taste of Honey, which sounds completely reasonable.
Totally.
You coming back from a catering gig almost sounds like you're being too fancy for the place.
A little bougie. It was. Did you ever watch that show about the caterers?
Yes, I watched season one, and it was really good. I watched like five episodes, and it was really good.
I could have written for that show. I mean, I had I did. Remember that movie Val Kilmer did where he played a blind dude? I catered for the premiere of that, and I'll never forget because Val Kilmer walks outside. He's having a cigarette.
Was this big Val Kilmer or skinny Val
Kilmer?
This
is like, this was when he was like transitioning from small, skinny Val Kilmer to fat Val Kilmer.
Yeah, he got in bear mode.
Yeah, yeah. FVK.
Yeah.
he was pre-FVK.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget, my boss had asked me, he had handed me a rubber, like a medical glove, and a trash bag, and he was like, out of the movie. If you could just go up around this courtyard and clean up all the cigarette butts. And I was thinking to myself, this is next level. This is not what I signed up for.
Is this acting? Okay.
And then Val Kilmer, and I remember in my brain, I'm just like, dude, I'm going to be at these premieres one day. I'm going to be.
So you're
like,
believing even then.
Somebody like they're going to have some other schmuck out here picking up cigarettes when I'm in there watching my movie. And Val Kilmer comes out. He comes out early. A lot of times stars, they've seen their movie, enough times during the circuits that like they're not going to go in and sit there and watch a movie. And he comes out and he has a cigarette and he tosses it down. Doesn't step on it and stub it out. Doesn't put it in the ashtray next to him. Just throws it on the ground while he sees what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Throws it on the ground, walks in. And I remember thinking to myself, you got to be kidding. First of all, like that's somebody I can never be that guy.
Yeah.
Like no matter what happened, no matter how fat I get,
Fat
no
Eric
matter
Layton?
How fat and famous I get,
sure.
Even if he's in transition, I cannot be that. And I remember being like, I'm not doing this anymore. And I worked for four catering companies, so I quit that night. I was like, I'm out.
So Val Kilmer disrespecting you is what made you quit. Did it help speed up your process of getting
quit
into the
that
game?
Catering company.
Oh, you went to another one.
Just
oh,
that
okay.
one. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, no, no.
And
I still
decided
then
and there, I will go to a different catering company. Oh, I thought it was going to end with like,
no,
and
wish.
It was 1 week later, I got my first big break on that. No, you just went to another catering company.
And that day, I quit Patina Catering. Damn it.
8:33, let's break it here. We come back, we're going to start hitting, we'll reset you on some Texans. And some Rockets and some Christmas. It's not even a quadruple header. I don't even know what you call it. A quintuple header.
Yeah, quintuple.
Five games. But to me, it's the jump-off point of the NBA season. Officially happened yesterday. So we'll get to that here. You guys want to jump in? Eric Layton is in studio. And our off-script podcast is pretty lit. You might want to get on that. You can check it on Google Play or on iTunes off-script. 713-780-3776.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Presented by Coors Light. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
8:37, 8:38 here on The Bench. Lance Zierlein and Eric Layton with you. Our boy Raheel's going to join us in just a second. So the Texans lost. It was good seeing David Questenberry get on the field. Cancer survivor. We know his story here in Houston. They brought him in as kind of a wing back, an additional tight end, basically, and let him play a little bit, which was fantastic. I don't think he'll be on the team next year. But it was really cool to see him back. He's got his weight up. Tremendous, tremendous story and fight back for him that started, you know, a few years back now. So great to see him make that comeback. It wasn't great to see the Houston Texans play. 34-6 was the final. We do have a sound. We do have a soundbite from Bill O'Brien. Bill O'Brien was asked about the running game because one of the few bright spots was Lamar Miller, and they were only 8-17 passing. They only had 17 pass attempts. But Bill O'Brien was like, "Yeah, maybe we passed too much.
Probably should have run it almost every down. Probably should have. You know, looking back on it, I don't know how many times we ran it, but." Probably should have done it a lot more than we did, you know, but he did a good job. He ran hard. Since he's been back healthy, he's been running hard, and I thought the line did a good job.
I mean, felt like 17 passes too much. I would have loved to see the head coach who says, you know what? Of course, three of those passes were down on the goal line where you should have run the ball. You are having success. I don't know why Bill O'Brien kept throwing the ball down there at the goal line. It's like, are you just trying to get fired here? What is this? Why aren't you just giving the ball – You ran it all the way down.
Yeah, I mean,
and then it ended with an interception.
How do you say that? And then you've got a situation where you're inside the six, and you've run the ball that entire drive, and then all of a sudden, first of all, Wildcat or Wild Bull or whatever creative stupid name you want to come up with that formation, Wildcat, yeah. Dude, that's a terrible play call. Okay, at least give it to somebody that you think might be able to throw the ball. And then you're going to pass the ball twice inside the five, where it's actually you've got less field to work with. Yeah. I just don't – in your fourth string quarterback. It makes zero sense.
Hey, I want to shout out real quick just because I want to get back to that. If you guys were at the game, anyone who was at the game, give us a call. I want to talk about the atmosphere there. I'm kind of curious because I did not go to it. 713-780-3776. 713-780-3776. If you were at the game, give us a shot. I want to get you on the air here. At this point, how do you feel about the argument that Bill O'Brien had success with Deshaun Watson? Because I legitimately don't know your thoughts on this. Bill O'Brien had success with Deshaun Watson. A lot of success. Deshaun was playing great.
I mean,
keep him because he had success with Deshaun Watson, had all these injuries. You can't beat him up for that. How much do you buy into that line of thinking?
Well, I just didn't know success was 500. Like, I mean, I'm not a math major, but success is actually when something is greater than negative.
So 9-7 is success here.
Right. Well, but wait, but with Deshaun Watson, with the quarterback, he was 500. That's actually not success. That's it's not failure, but it's not success. It's actually neutral. So he has never had success. Like, not, if you want to count
division
nine and,
championships, right? Kind of.
Right. And we're now talking about a division that, wait for it, the Jaguars are going to be the 3 seed in the AFC.
That's right. Now, they only got beat badly by San Francisco. Don't worry about it.
Okay, and they crushed us. Here's my thing with Bill O'Brien. It's not the two things to me that irritate me with him is they've never been able to go win a big game. They have never won the game that matters. They had a chance in Seattle this year. They had a chance in New England this year. They had a chance every year. They've got a chance against New England. They've never won. They don't win Monday night games. They don't win Sunday night games. They don't win primetime games. They don't win games against teams when it matters. And that's, you know, to me, like, I just don't understand how you can not only that, now we've got
never won those games.
And now you've got a team that for the last 2 weeks have gotten blown out, absolutely embarrassed. Embarrassed at home last night on Christmas Day. Like, that to me is unacceptable. Like, I don't care that it's the second string, third string. I don't care that Cushing comes out and says it's horrible. Well, dude, you've had 10 weeks to rest, okay? I mean, I know you're not eating the HGH beef jerky, but you've had 10 weeks to rest, dude. If anybody should be flying around the ball, it's you.
Sometimes you don't know what they're injecting into the beef, though. I mean, that's the problem.
That's true.
There.
Yeah.
Because hormones are such a problem right now with some of this. is it GMO? I don't know, Brian. I mean, I can't put anything on Brian. I think he does it the right way. And I think the two times he's been suspended, Eric, for PEDs, and then when he came out of and those pictures we saw at USC when he was a sophomore.
That was
and then
just
when he
good
was
strength
a
and conditioning.
Yeah.
That was
it's all just coincidences.
Yeah, yeah. SC has a phenomenal strength and conditioning program.
So, apparently.
Yeah, that was totally clean. I think it might be legal in California. I don't know.
No, it's not. Okay. Although I went to San Francisco, and you can – the amount of weed that you will run up on just in the streets of San Francisco, it's
contact high?
You stay contact high the whole time. You just can't even walk down the street. It's like, wow, it's here, there. It's not legal just to roll around down the street smoking, is it? Or is it? I don't even know the rules anymore, the laws.
Yeah, I mean, I know in California, there's billboards advertising like the best marijuana, best cannabis right here. You know,
but it's legal there, right? Without a prescription, or do you still have to have a prescription?
No. I believe it's legal.
See, you don't even know the.
I don't even know the rules. I mean, here's the deal. Nobody cares.
No one cares.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I think somebody had some oil or smoking from a vape pen, had some hash oil. I think at the Christmas party, I smelled it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure at our Christmas party just the other day.
Could have been
in the middle of pass rush drills.
Might have had like an abductor or something. You know,
yeah.
You just
don't
know.
Trying to deal with that pain.
Yeah.
Might have been that.
Yeah.
Lamont's listening. How about this? He goes, this guy is a huge House of Cards fan, and this is how his listening experience goes. LOL, damn, y'all brought this Atlanta guy on just to sports torture him. It's like you were going on a show, and they bring up every suck-ass Houston moment. Then Lamont realizes, holy bleep, that's Doug. You were interviewing Doug from House of Cards. Bleep, man. Then he goes, I blame Netflix for my TV watching habits. I can't even watch network TV anymore outside of sports and documentaries, sports/history. Honestly, I truly believe that Netflix's original programming and HBO's original programming, and now the fact that there's HBO Go and that there's Netflix and Apple TVs and Rokus and Fire Sticks, in a way, House of Cards, which is the headline show on streaming, right, that you mentioned, mm-hmm. It's kind of set the stage. That is responsible in part for the beginning of what we know as cord cutting, which is even cut into some of the NFL ratings. I know that the NFL players and the Colin Kaepernick stuff, yes, I believe some of that has hurt TV ratings. There's no question. But I think cord cutting is hurting ratings quite a bit as well, because the new generation is not going to consume TV the way we did.
No, you first of all, Netflix was that was the first. That was now that now cable television, I kind of go back to like Mad Men at AMC. I think they were one of the first to kind of be in an off-brand cable
Mad Men could definitely be a Netflix show right now.
For sure. What Netflix did, which was different, and they didn't even know they were going to do it at the time. In fact, when I talked to Mike about it, they didn't know what their model was going to be. They didn't know, you know, Amazon releases or Hulu releases the first three episodes of a show, and then after that, it's week to week. So it's still week to week. It's only Netflix and I believe Amazon that give you an entire season to watch.
That let you crush it in a week.
Exactly. Now, that's what they did that changed the game. And that changes the way a writer writes. That changes a lot from things you don't see on television. And now, you know, there's also like economic models to that are, you know, that kind of change the way you get paid and everything else. But that.
Oh, really?
Oh, sure. Well, because you don't get paid residuals, you know, like so because an actor makes its living on residuals, right? Like money that you make from when your show airs and reruns. And then if you're lucky enough, syndication, depending on what your show is and how long it's run and if you're available for syndication. But there you don't. So, you know, and that's one of the huge arguments of the union this year and something that will hopefully be negotiated down the road.
So Michael Kelly, so House of Cards is done. So Michael Kelly won't get
House of Cards actually isn't done. They're gonna go. They're still gonna shoot another season.
Oh, are they really?
Yeah.
Is that out there publicly?
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Robin Wright is gonna take charge, and I know Michael and Robin, you know, worked hard to make that happen. There's a lot of people that feed their families based on that show. So it's great. I'm glad they did that. And they'll probably wrap it up after this season. But yeah, Netflix changed the game in that regard. They allowed you the opportunity to binge.
Speaking of binge. You know, if you've been binging on the same vehicle for years and years and you want something new, a new recommendation, you guys are always looking for new show recommendations for us. I got a car recommendation. I got a truck recommendation. I got an SUV recommendation. For crossover car, I'm going to go Buick Enclave. For pickup truck, I'm going to go with the Chevy Silverado Texas Edition with $10,000 off MSRP at GulfCoast.net. And then for your SUV recommendation, I'm going to go with the Yukon. And if you got a big family like I've got, go with the Yukon XL, which is the extended body, which has all those. You got seats for seven, and you got a huge space in the back for you to pack everything up and go on your family vacations or your family trips. I just know this much. When you head down to Angleton and you go see my friend Craig to surf, he will make it worth your while to take that trip. I promise you that. And it's really not a very long trip if you're in Pearland, for example, or Sugarland. But if you're going to make that trip, he says, you come on out, and we're not going to play any games when it comes to the price. We're going to make sure we get right to the bottom line for you because we don't want to fuss around with price. And they're going to beat everyone else's price. The service, the selection, the price is untouchable at Gulf Coast Buick GMC Chevy. Make sure that you go ask for Craig to surf. Say, hey, I'm a good friend of Lance Zerline's. I've listened to him for years and years. I promise you, I don't care if you're my worst enemy or my best friend, you're still going to get an amazing hookup. Buy online if you want. They'll even drive the car into Houston for you. It's GulfCoast.net.
My name is Bob Lee, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Presented by Coors Light. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
A53 here. Let's get Lamont in because Lamont's a guy who is a huge House of Cards fan. Didn't know at first that Michael Kelly was Doug Stamper. And then as the interview went on, he realized, holy crap, this is Doug Stamper, also a monster Atlanta Falcons fan and Braves fan. Let's bring him in right now. Lamont, what's going on? Good seeing you at the Christmas party.
Hey, yeah, man. Want to talk about the Texans, but get back to House of Cards, man. I think Kevin Spacey's his whole situation was convenient for that show. because it's my opinion, man, that show was done once Hillary lost the election, because that show mirrored a lot of the Clintons, and that they were setting it up for the lady, the wife, to take over, and she eventually did temporarily. But after Hillary lost, the show just pretty much went downhill. It was really following today's world, man. But after Hillary lost, it went downhill. I thought they was going to try to make Russ into Donald Trump or something, but they didn't go that direction with it. But I didn't see much of that show lasting after Hillary won, man, because that was the way I seen it.
Yeah, but you I want to follow up with you, because Eric and I talked about this on the podcast one time. So I didn't love House of Cards this last year. I thought the writing is just, but Eric made a good point. You just eventually run out of storyline. Like, that's been six, seven seasons. At some point, the writer's like, I'm not sure how many, like, every show has a shelf life.
Yeah, I just think one thing people don't think about when you're watching television, when you watch a movie, you're watching a movie, you're watching characters for 2.5 hours. When you watch a television series, especially one that you can binge, House of Cards is a 10-hour movie. Now you're watching it for 4 seasons. That's 40 hours. 40 hours of a character, 40 hours of a storyline, 40 hours. That is a lot to be able to keep, to keep an audience, which is why a lot of these anthology shows are happening now. You know, one season, new storyline, next season, new characters, or even something like Black Mirror or Easy, where it's one episode, one storyline.
Yeah, and then they don't connect. Although Easy connected characters from season one into season two, and a couple times the storyline carried over, but I mean that's much easier. What else were you gonna say, Lamont?
But also on House of Cards, what I loved about House of Cards and The Wire is all of this stuff that for years we sat in the barbershop and talked to our friends about, to just see them. One thing with House of Cards, how they get into the deals between the two sides of the parties, and with The Wire, how they let you know how local government really works, like really get in there. So that's what I appreciate about those two type of shows. With the Texans, man, I wrote an article, man, on Houston sports and stuff with Fred Fowler, on Fred Fowler's site, man. And I was talking about two positive things for the Texans. One of them being that we're gonna have a third or last place schedule. So that'll be the difference between two games. I know the other 14 games are pretty much penciled in. So, you know, that's a positive. It's slim pickings. But the other thing I wanted to ask you, Lance, was this. I hate national games. And in the past, national games pretty much varied on your prior season. This year we have a wild card with Deshaun Watson. Man, is there any way that they only give us like one? I guess I'm just asking you a stupid question right now, man. With Deshaun Watson, we're going to probably get about 6 or 7.
No, see, I think you get three at the most. You could get a Thursday. I think you'll get one Thursday and one Sunday. I don't know. Sunday night, Monday night, who cares? Yeah, you have to have a Thursday. But either a Sunday or I think they do have a chance to get three, Eric. Because Deshaun Watson, because it's still going to be J.J. Clowney, Watson. Like, there's a lot of New Hopkins. There's a lot of name. There's still name brand value on the Texans.
Yeah, I mean, I think, too, also you got a new
head
coach.
Why do you hate that? Just because they stink on national television?
Absolutely, man.
Well, yeah, they do. I mean, they suck on national television.
Yeah, but see, that's the mentality I'm talking about. A Houston fan, Lamont, dude.
It's because it's
been
15 years.
But it doesn't matter. So you're going to hide from a national televised game now?
Well,
you're going to go away from it because you can't win on national television?
But just win them.
Thank you.
Win a game.
That's what I'm talking about, though. You can't be a Houston fan that wants to all of a sudden, that just wants to duck a national televised game because you can't win it.
It's usually against better teams. That's why. There's an actual thing going on. It's not just them taking on the Browns.
I hadn't thought about the last place schedule thing. That's a real possibility.
That's going to be good. We want that.
By the way, the Colts are still competitive. The Colts have lost a bunch of guys too. They're still competing.
Yeah,
because
they've been in this crap position for a while. So it's not
only
new
a couple
them.
Years.
Yeah, longer than the Texans.
The Texans have been in a crap position when the 9-7 division championship.
I'm sorry. What did you just say? What was that last bit?
Yeah.
division championships. That's good.
Point. Okay, you think the Jags are like, well, this division was down this year. We can't celebrate this division championship.
Hey,
they're
Jags,
happy.
You get an AFC South title,
no,
too.
No, they get the banner, man.
You get the AFC South title because this is officially what happens with AFC South titles. Your team looks really good on some occasions, and then you say, boy, I'm glad we play in this sorry-ass division. Yeah. Every year, that's what it is.
Let me ask you this while we're on the division. So you're Jacksonville. You've locked in your spot. You play Tennessee. If you beat Tennessee, you don't play. You get the Chargers.
Mm-hmm.
But you've already locked in your spot. So do you lay down, okay, rest your guys, let Tennessee win, but then you're going to see Tennessee for the third straight or for three times this season? They're kind of in a weird spot this week.
Because
if they lose to Tennessee, they see Tennessee.
Twice.
They lose. They get Tennessee again.
You want to go into the playoffs with two straight losses?
I'm not saying that. But you don't rest your starters before a wild card?
That's a good question.
This is the first time you've had the opportunity
to do
that.
I think you rest certain starters.
And are you afraid of Tennessee?
No.
I know you've seen them
Tennessee
three straight
times. Tennessee could be dangerous, though. I don't think Tennessee's
a layup. I'm not afraid
of
them. If I'm that team, I go, my defense is, I'm okay with them facing off against Marcus Mariota, who's having a regression year right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like
same thing with Dak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Tennessee's by far the most overvalued 8-7 or whatever they are team. But I will say, I do think there's something to be said about facing a division team now three times in a season. I think that becomes difficult once you get, playoffs are a different breed.
It can be. But the Jaguars have a chance to be devastating defensively. But once again, at the end of the day, they're an AFC South title winner. And I don't say that as a congratulations. I say it like, this is a terrible division yet again. And the winner of the division wins in part because of the division.
But even when Peyton was winning these divisions, was it really a good division?
No, it was not. It's been still bad for a long time.
Yeah.
No, it's always been bad.
A lot of bottom feeders. So what?
We got a break. Raheel's now on with us, so we're going to go a lot of different directions when we come back right here on the bench. / Raheel and John Show. / featuring Dell. / featuring Lance.
Now when the sun come up.
ESPN 97.5.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell, and if you know my husband, Dax, then you also know he loves shopping for a car. Selling a car? Not so much.
We're really doing this, huh?
Thankfully, Carvana makes it easy. Answer a few questions, put in your VIN or license, and done. We sold ours in minutes this morning, and they'll come pick it up and pay us this afternoon.
Goodbye, Truckee.
Of course, we kept the favorite.
Hello, other Truckee.
Sell your car with Carvana today. Terms and conditions apply.